Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Aaron Reynolds. Aaron, thank you for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
I'm excited. Now, some people, I usually ask the person who's the guest to tell the people how they might know you. I think if folks who are familiar with your work are probably familiar with your vast Twitter empire. So tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah. So I have a lot of Twitter accounts. In fact, I actually reached the maximum number of Twitter accounts that my Twitter client would let me sign in at the same time. And I had to say, oh, some of these that I'm not using anymore, I should sign out. How do I explain it?
Can you explain it? Is the question.
A year and a half ago, I got kind of sick and I had to stay home from work. I couldn't do my job. And I was trying not to lose my mind out of boredom. And I started watching obsessively the Adam West Batman TV series. And what a great series. And I started really noticing all the jokes where things were labeled. And I think those jokes are absolutely the funniest thing in the whole show. And I started taking screenshots of them and posting them to Twitter. And some of my friends said, Aaron, we get that you're really sick. Can you please stop it with all the Batman screenshots? And I thought, no, but what I will do is give it its own Twitter account. And that was BatLabels. And now it has 40,000 followers, which is just mind blowing to me. And then later, and I don't even remember what prompted it, but I started making GIFs from episodes of Star Trek and overlaying like new dialogue captions, mostly filled with swear words, and Swear Trek was born, and it just broke the 30,000 follower, mark. And then there's lots of things that are not as popular as those, but probably people would know me from BatLabels or Swear Trek.
There, and if you're not following both or either of them, you should check them out. Although if you don't like swearing, maybe not, yeah. Swear Trek, but
Swear Trek is not for you if you don't like swearing. On the other hand, if you like creative swearing, it is the absolute best.
I agree. It is very funny, and I enjoy BatLabels as well. It brings back, not that I was when I was a kid, I watched the Adam West Batman, not because I was watching it in reruns, obviously. A lot of fun, and I never really. Oh, I mean, I noticed every once in a while they would have a giant switch, and next to it would be labeled giant switch.
Yep, absolutely. My favorite is the subtle interrogation lamp that has a giant label that says subtle interrogation lamp beside it.
Oh, Batman.
Oh yeah, what a great show.
Yes, but this is not, lest people who are listening think they may have tuned into the random Batman podcast.
That's right. I have a podcast. It's theoretically about Batman, and it's never about Batman. I think there has been 2 of 30 episodes about Batman, and the rest of them have been about Star Trek or James Bond or something else.
Now, I'm going to assume, Aaron, now correct me if I'm wrong, that you would consider yourself, I'm looking at, so we do these via Skype, I'm revealing a peek behind the curtain of Random Trek production. Also, 98% of how podcasts are made is via Skype.
Yes.
And your avatar is, you are wearing a science or medical, depending on how you feel, Star Trek shirt, and drinking cup of, I assume, coffee. I don't know.
It's coffee. Coffee. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a Stitch Perfect reproduction of a season 3 double knit nylon sciences uniform there.
So this, I think, answers 2 of my questions. Do you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Yes.
And then sometimes I ask on a scale of casual viewer to I've dressed up as someone from Star Trek, where would you fit in that spectrum? And I think we've answered that question as well.
And I'm going to go a little bit further and tell you that is not my only Star Trek uniform. I own a made for the production but not worn in the film Into Darkness sciences uniform.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Not my favorite Star Trek film, but I really like that uniform.
Now, my problem with the Starfleet uniforms is that I am a generously portioned man, let's say. I'm not slim, and I do not believe those uniforms would be flattering to me.
I think the ones that you want to aim for are the later original crew movies.
Yes.
The maroon ones.
That, yes, they hide many sins.
Yes. Especially the Star Trek V Captain Kirk's special jacket.
Yes.
I really like that jacket. We were at the Star Trek Experience exhibit when it was here in Ottawa. I'm in Ottawa, Canada. And they had some of the Star Trek movie series uniforms, and they had one that they said was William Shatner's uniform from Star Trek 2-6. And I looked at it and I said, yep, 100%, that's the original belt, because you can see all the places where they've punched new holes to make it a little bigger between movies.
You know, hey, he's William Shatner's successful career. He should be able to enjoy the fruits of his labor.
100%. Love that, gentlemen.
And if William Shatner needs a hole punched in his belt, by God, you punch a hole in his belt.
That's right. Maybe don't tell him that you did it.
Probably
just
not. You just
do it quietly in the background.
Yes. And then you're like, Bill, look, your uniform, it fits after 3 years. It's amazing.
You've done great work in the off season, Bill.
So now we are going to talk about, sometimes the universe gives us a random episode of Star Trek that is great. Sometimes it is okay. Sometimes it's an Enterprise episode.
And oh man. Yeah. Well, so I don't hate Enterprise. I have fond memories of Enterprise, although the last time I watched the series, the only time I watched the series was almost 10 years ago. And I remembered liking it, and I remembered especially liking the third and fourth seasons. And I remembered, liking things about the Zindi arc, and we got an episode that's part of the Zindi arc. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a great opportunity this will be for me to remember all the things I like about Enterprise.
Yes.
And then, no.
And then you watched the episode that we watched, Hatchery, which is from season 3. It's episode 17, for those who want to rush and watch it. Although,
can I recommend not doing that?
Some people watch before the episode, before they listen, I assume. And if you did, I apologize. Now, yes, I am so not... I also am not... I give Enterprise a hard time because it is my least favorite series. But much like I try to tell people, it is my least favorite, but I still like it because it's Star Trek and I like Star Trek. So I enjoy it on some levels.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fair. It has a lot of good stuff going for it. Like, I like Enterprise's, the way it deals with the Vulcans a lot. Like, I like that it sets them up as not really the villains, but kind of the conflict characters. And I like that the Vulcans aren't particularly noble. And I like a lot of the characters in the show, but not all of the characters.
So what characters do you like on Enterprise? I don't want to pile on Enterprise. So let's talk about the good before we talk about this episode.
Yeah. Well, I like T'Pol a lot, and I like and actually in this episode it was making me remember why I liked that character, because her struggle with how Archer is behaving is, I think, probably the good part of this episode.
Yes.
I like that she's sort of like frustrated. You know, it's hard to play a character that is being emotionless, but also be able to show frustration. And I really like that about the character, and I like that about the performance. And I like that Hoshi makes the communications officer role not a glorified switchboard operator. Like, they did a good job of making that of sort of like redeeming that role on the Enterprise. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, because the conceit, right, is that they do have a universal translator, but it's not great.
Yeah.
And she's super good
at translating languages and hearing. And I love that one of the things that happened in the J.J. Abrams Trek movies is that came forward and became part of Uhura's character. And I think that's a huge contribution to the Star Trek universe from Enterprise right there.
I totally agree, because I like Uhura, but she never really has much to do. I mean, it's a 60s show. We were just talking, before we started recording, we were talking about things that were of their time. And so the original series, of its time. So it was great that they had an African-American woman on the bridge doing stuff, but they didn't really let her do anything.
Right. And like, it really resonated with me, the story of her almost quitting the show because she felt like she had nothing to do, and being convinced that she should stay just because of how visible she was there and how important that was.
By Martin Luther King Jr. So yeah, exactly. If someone's going to convince you of something, and it's Martin Luther King Jr., you just do what he tells you to do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if Martin Luther King Jr. asks you to do anything, you just say, even if I don't understand it, I'm going to do it.
That's right.
Clearly you are a smart person.
That's right. I will do what you tell me to do. But Uhura is not in this episode, but Hoshi is good. I like Hoshi. I feel like, I also like the fact that many episodes. So, you know, one of the things I like about, kind of minor characters is that they break out of the mold of like super competent, always, confident characters.
Yep.
And Hoshi is, super competent, but she is, you know, there are many episodes where she's facing this horrifying thing and she's reacting as a normal human would, as opposed to, you know, a Starfleet officer who's like, I need to stay cool and calm. And she's like, we're all going to die and this is freaking me out. I'm not afraid to say it. And I like that.
Yep. I like that she's I think she's a much better audience surrogate than, say, Wesley Crusher.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to say bad things about Wesley Crusher. I think all the bad things that can be said about Wesley Crusher have been said about Wesley Crusher. But yeah, like I like that she's, like you said, like a super competent bridge officer who lets us experience, my God, I'm terrified of these bug-like aliens or whatever it is.
And as well, because I don't even have the super competent part, but I would be terrified of those bug aliens.
Of course.
I get it. Hoshi, I get it. Now, what do you think of my favorite? So, my favorite character on Enterprise.
You say Porthos?
Porthos is super cute. He is the cutest character on Enterprise, and he makes an appearance. I was going to say the best part of this episode is Porthos is there. It's always a good episode when Porthos shows up. He's so cute. Dr. Phlox is.
Yeah, I love Phlox.
Bar none, my favorite character on Enterprise.
Yeah. I like him because he's he has the ability and this was they took advantage of it a lot to just suddenly be bizarre, you know, and just in the middle of a scene or out of nowhere suddenly something bizarre will happen. Like I don't even remember what episode it is, but the episode where he reveals that he is astonishingly good at basketball is one of my favorite. like I can see it in my head right now. And as a performance, it's really great because he just like, he barely moves. He just sort of puts his hands up and then suddenly the ball is in the net.
Yes. And I love the fact that, you know, he is so often in many Star Trek series, we get aliens who aren't that alien. They're, you know, they have something funny on their forehead. But that's about it. Right. And that's how we know they're aliens. Dr. Right. Phlox is pretty, he's alien. He does strange things to us. And he is unlike any other medical officer in any Star Trek series in that he wants to put like, you know, worms in your ear to help with nausea and what have you.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
He's delightful and he's not all that much in this episode. I guess he's a little bit, but
I smiled when I saw him. But yeah, yes. He didn't have a lot to do. Actually, you know what? A lot of people didn't have a lot to do in this episode. A lot of this episode was like wheel spinning or there was a lot of sexual tension between Reed and what's his name? Hayes.
That is true.
There's a lot of scenes where they just gaze at each other.
And there's a lot of Bacula on display in this episode as well.
Yeah. He was down in his blue underwear.
He does. For the ladies some of the men in the audience. And I thought to myself, how old is Scott Bakula in this? Because he is in incredible shape. But
I feel like he was working out real hard knowing that episode was coming.
I think that is probably true.
Yeah.
But then we have to talk about Scott Bakula, though, before we delve into here, because I have gone on record as saying I am not a Captain Archer fan. What are your thoughts on Archer?
I remembered not having issues with, like, I don't have a problem with Bakula as Archer. I have a problem with sometimes the way Archer is written because he has to carry the weight of pushing the plot forwards. Like it somehow keeps falling on Archer to, like in this episode, Archer does a whole bunch of bizarre things and we eventually find out why. Although it's pretty obvious right from the very beginning of the
almost
episode.
Immediately, why. You know, why.
Almost immediately. Yeah. The thing is, like, it always feels like it's bad decision-making on Archer's part that keeps like plots going in the whole series. I was thinking about that when I was watching. Do you watch The Flash?
I do.
This season of The Flash has been a lot of Barry Allen making bad decisions.
A lot of moping around, too.
Yeah, moping and bad decisions. And I feel like that's, you know, maybe Barry Allen is Jonathan Archering right now.
I think that's true, because one of the things that I really loved about The Flash when it came on was that it was so much fun. He was exploring his powers, and he was having a good time. And then, you know, you go to the Arrow when you want dark, brooding, troubled souls. You go to Flash when you want someone who runs really fast and is having fun fighting crime.
That's right. I like that at least partially Supergirl has picked up the mantle of being fun this season. The Mr. I can't say his name.
Mitzelplick
episode. Yeah, exactly. That guy, that episode was a delight, and I can't recommend that one enough. Also, and this is a super nerdy thing. Did you get the Tim Burton Superman movie joke that was in that episode?
I don't think I did.
So when Mr. when he's trying to convince Supergirl that they should be together, he causes a whole bunch of chaos in the city, and then he shows up as Superman to solve the problem, but then he turns around and reveals that it's him. But he's not Superman. He's Nicolas Cage in the screen test for Tim Burton's Superman. He has his long stringy hair, and he needs to shave a little bit, and his Superman suit is cut just a little bit too low for comfort. And it blew my mind. And then I thought, I am hallucinating this. And then I went and did a bunch of Google image searches, and I was like, I'm not hallucinating this. Someone on the staff of this show is such a huge nerd. And then I was like, is this the episode Kevin Smith directed? Because that seems like a Kevin Smith joke. And it wasn't. It's the episode after the episode Kevin Smith directed. But God, what a great joke for me. I don't know if it's a good joke for anybody else, but what a joke for me.
I was going to say, that's a highly specific joke.
Yep.
That I do not get. But now that you have pointed it out, I will look it up. I think I've seen the Nicolas Cage screen test. So
it's awful. I'm so glad that movie did not happen.
I think many people are glad as well.
Yeah.
But my point there was, so Flash was fun. Now he's mopey. Archer, I feel like Scott Bakula is an actor who can have a lot of fun. Is it very charming? And they said, hey, Scott Bakula, your strengths as an actor is that you're charming and you're a lot of fun. So play this guy who's kind of super serious and a little bit mopey and tortured and have fun with it.
Yeah. And that's like, I think that the highlight of this episode is the very end or near the very end when he is full on in mother mode. That was like, this is the Scott Bakula I want to see on television.
Covered in tiny insect aliens.
Yeah. Going, you shouldn't have weapons in here. The babies. I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yes.
That scene almost made the episode worthwhile. Almost made it.
Not quite, but almost. So I'll do a very quick overview of what this episode is, and then we can talk about some interesting highlights or lowlights, depending on how you you want to describe it. So
mostly lowlights.
Yes. So this is part of the Zindi arc, which was interesting, right? It was kind of after 9/11, and the Zindi are building super weapons and threatening Earth. So relevant, all the, you know, the things that hardcore Star Trek fans say Star Trek should be. And yet this episode, not so great, because it doesn't really have anything to do with that.
It feels like a filler episode, like, we need an episode in between. We need to pause the main story and just take a side story where at the end of the story, everything's reset back to the way it was. So that if we skip this episode, nothing bad will happen.
That's right. So give people a little breathing room to get off of the anxious high that we left them at. with, you know, will they or won't they find the Zindi weapon?
Yeah, let's make a super stressful storyline, and then let's like, oh, just this week we're just going to do something else, and then we'll come back to that story later.
Right. They didn't have Q in Enterprise, so they could just throw a Q episode in. Although it would have been interesting. And this
I was going to say, Q's timeless. Q could do that if he really wanted to.
That's true, but I guess they never did. And this is where someone will email me and tell me that there's some Q tie-in or something that I haven't
noticed. There's an Enterprise novel that you haven't read.
I'm sure there is. Yes. They don't count, though. much like the animated series.
Oh, don't go there. don't do it. Love the animated series.
Well, we can talk about that, but first we need to.
Yes, let's talk about this episode. Absolutely.
Talk about this episode because people have watched it, I'm sure, and now they want to hear our observations about it. So the Enterprise is en route to find this planet where they think the Zindi are building this weapon. But before they go there, they notice a different planet, I guess, that has a crashed ship on it. So they check it out. It's a Zindi ship, but it's unlike any Zindi ship they've seen before. So they say, hey, let's beam down and check it out. Makes sense to me.
And by the way, already this had lost my interest by the scene. I was like, oh, God, no, focus, Aaron. I'm going to talk about this later. So you have to, because you're explaining this to me right now. And I was like, did I watch that? Yeah, oh, yeah,
I did watch that. Is that? Yes, that's what happens. Also, yeah. There's apparently for some reason, like Earth Marines on the ship. I'm sure that's explained in some other Zindi arc thing. But there are, you know, army guys. It's important the later.
Mikos. Yeah.
Mikos, yes. And so they beam down in their suits, their spacesuits. They're looking around. Everything seems to be dead. They power cycle a lock or something, and they decide, hey, the air is breathable, so let's just take off our suits.
And I actually have that written down here. It's like, sure, everything is dead on this ship, but let's breathe the air here anyways.
It's crazy.
The whole episode would not have happened if they kept their helmets on.
Exactly. And it makes no sense. This is, you know, I often rail against Starfleet security protocols. And I think this falls into that bucket of you don't take off your spacesuit's helmet on a strange ship, people, even if you think the air is breathable.
Yeah, just don't do it.
Don't do it. Especially... If you find a secret room full of eggs, don't take your helmet off in that room.
I don't know if this is the same universe as our universe, but you'd think these people would have seen Alien.
you think they would.
Yeah.
But I guess...
By the way, speaking of taking off their helmets and the absolutely no good reason that they take their helmets off, this episode was written by the guy who was the science advisor on Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, no. You have failed us.
Yeah, no.
Because it makes no sense. I understand why they did it, because they want to get to the MacGuffin, right? But it just annoys me. Anyway, so they take off their helmets. They're running around the ship, devil may care. They find the hatchery. They figure out, I guess, that they've never seen an insectoid Zindi, but now they have, because they have found dead bodies. So they beam them up, and Phlox is dissecting them. Then they find this room full of eggs.
Enjoy that. Yeah.
And everybody's poking around in the eggs. And Archer gets sprayed in the face by an egg. And nobody seems that concerned.
It's like, oh, it's just defending itself. It's just like some venom. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I felt like if that happened, you should immediately beam up and be quarantined relieved of duty, because who knows what the heck happened to you.
But yeah, and so the thing with this episode, and I think the reason this episode is not a good episode, is because its central quote-unquote mystery is so non-mysterious because of the way everyone reacts when Archer is sprayed by the egg.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, ah, yeah, it's no problem. Well, then why did it happen?
Because
so clearly it's the problem.
The egg thought it was being threatened or something.
Yeah.
And so this is where Dr. Phlox, who, you know, I normally respect his medical opinion, but this time he dropped the ball because they do beam up Archer and, you know, he checks him out or they take a shuttlecraft up, whatever. And Phlox is like, oh, it's fine. It was just a mild irritant. Everything should be fine. But then all of a sudden...
He uses a Q-tip to put something on his skin.
Oh, that's what he does. But then Archer becomes obsessed with saving these eggs. He does everything in his power to save these eggs. He starts putting people under house arrest, basically, because they're disagreeing with him. He's totally un-Archer-like. And
it's not a gradual progression. He goes straight crazy right away.
Yes. It isn't like a little like, I'm having some moral qualms about just leaving these eggs here. It's, we must protect the babies.
It's like he beams down and then immediately has like what looks like bird poop all over his shoulder and he stops shaving.
Yes.
And so for the rest of the episode, he just looks like an absolute madman.
And his uniform just gets dirtier and dirtier, and nobody seems to think this is a problem.
It's like, do you not have a second uniform?
That's right. Everybody else's uniform is very clean. His is the only one that's dirty.
Maybe he's the tallest guy there, and he only has one.
That's right. So he keeps brushing against egg clusters. As you do.
Yeah, when you're in an alien hatchery.
And then, you know, spoiler alert, guess what? The egg did, in fact, spray some highly complex stuff on him that changes his very synapses and reversed imprinted him so that he wanted to look after the babies.
I thought that part was super clever. Like, I like that idea. I like the idea that the way that these creatures look out for themselves or look out for their young is by having whatever else is around, basically brainwashed into thinking it needs to take care of the young. Like, that's a great, you know, conceit, and it could have made for a good episode and somehow it did not.
It did not. No. And then they fly away and that's it.
Well, there's a mutiny. Don't forget the mutiny.
I skipped over that part because...
But that's the only good part.
Well, I wanted to talk about it specifically as being the good part, right? Because eventually they decide, hey, Archer's being a little crazy.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of scenes, I think, they build the tension of people being like, well, he's the captain. We probably should do what he wants, especially Trip is like, you know.
Yeah, Trip gets to be good and conflicted.
Exactly. It's like, he's the captain. He's never led us wrong. If he wants to be these eggs baby mama, I guess we should let him.
Eggs baby mama. Insect egg baby mama.
That's right.
Should be the name of this episode.
Yeah, that would have been a better name, I think. And everybody's like, well, I don't know, but I guess, okay. And then, you know, what's-his-face, Malcolm is having his sexual tension with the mocha guy.
Yeah, Hayes.
Yes, who apparently wants his job, I guess, and then gets his job in this episode briefly.
Not the way he wanted to get it.
No, he didn't earn it. He got it because Archer was crazy. And then T'Pol, being the voice of reason, basically says, listen, you're crazy, Captain. We're not going to... Because the thing is that they need to start up the engines of the crashed ship in order to save the eggs.
Like 30% of their antimatter or something like that.
And that will leave them perilously close to having an empty tank, I suppose, when they're about to go off into this big battle, they think. So it seems like a bad idea. Now, I do think it is an interesting kind of ethical dilemma, right? Because they are living things.
Oh, yeah. And I think that the ethical dilemma of... or even Archer's first stated like reason for doing it of we have to show them, like, they want to kill us because they think we're barbarians. We have to show them we're better than that. The best way to do that is to, you know, to save these babies because these babies have done nothing wrong. And I found that compelling, and it just, he was already clearly crazy at that.
That is the problem.
And so if that performance had sort of gradually gotten there, if he hadn't already had the bird poop all over him when he started that scene, I would have believed it as coming from Archer, not from crazy brainwashed Archer. You know, it's like the Jack Nicholson performance in The Shining, where he starts kind of crazy and he stays crazy, and then at the end he's still crazy, but, you know.
Yes. Although The Shining better than this episode of Enterprise.
You know what's better than this? I was thinking about Turnabout Intruder. Is that the one where Kirk has his body taken over by the vengeful woman who couldn't get promoted into the captaincy?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Like that one as an episode where your captain goes crazy and then there's a court martial and an attempted mutiny. I think that's a better attempted mutiny episode of Star Trek.
Yes.
And it's not a very good episode. That's probably the worst episode of the original series. No. The alternative factor is the worst episode of the original series.
Yes, but it's still better than many of those episodes are still better than this episode.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I think that there's not much there in this episode, right? There's this one, they put all of their story juice behind this one story, and it's not really that great of a story. Yep.
It's kind of boring, and I think that's like the cardinal sin. At least the alternative factor is not boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's dumb and weird, but it's not boring.
Yes. This episode, I mean, I can't. So the mutiny is a little exciting, right? Because eventually, I mean, it's a slow build. He puts T'Pol, he orders her to her quarters. He does the same thing to Malcolm, I think.
Yeah. Yep. He makes, I like all the sneaking around.
Yes.
Sneaking around and trying to figure out who's with them, breaking into the armory. Mm-hmm. And it had really good mutiny music. I actually wrote that down in my notes here. It says, I like this mutiny music.
It was good mutiny music. And I liked the, you know, they stunned some people on the bridge. So that was exciting.
It was a great little standoff on the bridge. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, then it just doesn't really peter out. It just, the whole episode peters out. It's not very compelling.
I was hoping that something, I was hoping we would resolve the Malcolm Hayes dispute by having Hayes, who was on the bridge at the time, like in the standoff. I would love it if Hayes had said, look, I'm not crazy about his behavior either. I think it's crazy. Like, let's all work together and solve this instead of being a fist fight and a wrestling match.
Right. And then Hayes after that was like, you should have told me what was going on. And Malcolm was like, well, we couldn't take the chance. Because
Hayes is like, oh, you're right. Yeah, I would have sided with
Kevin. Totally. Yeah. And they're like,
well,
that's the whole point. Hayes.
Nobody learned anything in this episode.
No. And this episode even has a space battle. It doesn't make it any more exciting.
Yeah, that was the least. I was like, was it leftover footage from another space battle?
And it lasted like 30 seconds. So
the ship went by and we shot at it and it exploded.
That's right. And then Archer comes in and says, I can't believe you blew up our enemy ship.
And that's why he confines Malcolm to quarters.
That's right. Yeah. Malcolm's like, WTF, I was doing my job, man.
Exactly.
And Archer's like, won't you think of the children? They could have taken the children. Reed.
Good Lord.
And Reed is like, what? And then, I think the best scene we already talked about is when Archer is finally down on the ship again.
And the babies are hatching.
And the babies are hatching. He's kind of gone full Khaleesi. And he's got two little insect babies on his shoulders. And Trip is like,
Captain.
He's tripping.
Yeah. I just love his delivery of the line. It's in this beautiful, gentle voice of you shouldn't have weapons in here. So at odds with the rest of, you know, his performance in the episode.
Yes, it is good. And then he gets stunned, and off they go. They leave the babies in the ship. They magically cure Archer somehow. We don't need to concern ourselves with how. He recuperates.
Put him in a special tube.
That's right. Oh, they do mention the tube. The magic tube fixes everything. And this is where we see Porthos. He's Archer's laying on his bed, and Porthos is keeping his company, as any good dog should. Trip comes to say, hey, how are you doing? Archer's like, I'm fine. Let's go to the bridge. Trip is like, maybe you should rest up. And Archer's like, probably. And the end.
And then I was like, oh, God, thankfully that is over. And I've never hit done so fast when watching an episode.
Yeah, this one, I try to find... I say even bad Star Trek has redeeming qualities. So this one, I don't know. I liked the little baby insects. I thought they were cute.
They were cute. They look like the characters in Ants.
The
animated film Ants. They look a lot like those ants. Mm-hmm. I actually thought about, what's the timeline of those two? Did they reuse the models from the baby ants?
Is this if they talked, would they sound like Woody Allen?
Oh, God.
Was that Woody Allen in the Ants?
Yeah, I think that's Ants. This one has Sylvester Stallone. That's
Ants. Yes. So that's the star-studded cavalcade of Ants.
And Dave Foley's in A Bug's Life.
Yes, the better.
I got this. We got our B-movie, Jerry Seinfeld.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Have you seen
other animated Bug movies?
Have you seen? And you probably have seen. There's this YouTube cut of the B-movie where they replace every utterance of the word bee with the entire bee movie, and so it lasts forever.
I think there's this genre of very difficult comedy that's going around right now, and I really appreciate it, and yet at the same time I don't want to watch any of it.
My
favorite example was Click Holes. We left this stick of butter out on the counter for 10 hours and you won't believe what happened next. And it's a 10 hour video of butter melting.
Well, there's this whole movement of slow TV, right? Where you just watch like, you know, a stick of butter melting or like a train going along its route or something.
No.
And people find it very relaxing.
No, I'm not going to go with that.
You reject it.
No, I reject it. You know what? One of the things that I was thinking of when I was watching this episode, when I was reaching for good things about this episode, was I was thinking about Reed and Hayes's stupid turf war, but about how that neither of them are bad guys. You know, and I like any show that manages to get conflict together where everybody's coming from a good place. And it made me think of, did you watch The Expanse?
Yes, I haven't seen the second season yet. But
yeah, I'm only a few episodes into the second season. I love The Expanse, and one of my favorite things about The Expanse is that the first season essentially does not have a villain in it.
Mm-hmm.
The more the show unwraps itself, the more you recognize that every single character has a positive motivation, you know? And by the time an actual villain shows up, you question whether or not even they're really a villain. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. that was one of the most refreshing things about that show for me. And so then seeing this very bad version of it with Reed and Hayes just made me sad.
Yes. And I think if I had a knock against the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies is that they feel compelled to have this central villain all the time.
Right.
And I felt like Beyond could have gotten rid of the central villain and just kind of made, you know, the wilderness and the Starfleet and the Federation's expanding kind of be the villain, quote unquote. But they didn't do that, sadly.
Yeah, that would be an interesting idea, actually. I'd be curious to as how that story would pan out.
Right, because I think, obviously, we've talked about this already, the best Star Trek movie is Star Trek II, which has a very clear villain.
Yep.
But then that's really the only Star Trek original series movie that has, like, that clear of a villain. I guess Star Trek V, right. Kind of, but But, you know, Star Trek IV, Star Trek VI, these are the ones that are great, and they're just kind of dealing with a changing world. There's no one particular super evil bad guy that's going to do something.
Right.
And I agree.
And I mean, I even like, I like the first Star Trek film. I mean, I'm not going to claim that it's some kind of really great film.
The soundtrack. Oh, man, the score of that movie is, yeah. I will fight anyone who doesn't like that.
Did you see the La La Land Records recent issue of it with this beautiful colored vinyl with the Starfleet Delta insignia inside of it?
I did. I didn't buy it because I don't have a record player. But
I don't have a record player. I want to put it up on my wall. But I did not. I was a good boy and did not buy that. Just in case my wife is listening to this podcast, I did not buy that record.
I was going
to
say my wife would have issue if I'd bought a record. Even if I explained how cool it was.
Yeah. But I love the idea behind that film, and I love V'ger as as a character and a conceit, and I think that it would have made a really compelling TV pilot. You know,
yes.
In a 90-minute slot or in a 1-hour slot, you know, that would have been a really super, super Star Trek story.
That's true. Or, you know, a fine movie if they trimmed maybe about 3 hours of slow panning over models of starships. And I like models of starships. Don't get me wrong.
And they're great models of starships. I got to see Douglas Trumbull at the TIFF Bell Lightbox Theater in Toronto a few years ago, talking about some of the films he had worked on. And when he told the story of how he got called in at the last minute to do these special effects for Star Trek, the motion picture, because they had already blown their entire model effects budget and they didn't have a single usable shot. And so he got called in and took over and did really miraculous, beautiful work, because all that ship work is just like, I think it's magnificent to see, but because they didn't have good storyboards for him and because they didn't have like really clear direction for him, he gave them these really long shots so that they could cut the parts they needed out of them, and then was astonished that they had used the entire shots in the film.
That's a great story. Yeah, that movie, it has its problems. I think the biggest one is just so damn long.
Yeah, it's really long.
Man. I saw it.
The director's cut version that came out a few years ago is, it helps. It's shorter, but no, it's still too long.
I did see it. There was a website here in Philadelphia called Geekadelphia that was doing, they did this a couple of years ago, Star Trek movie festival where they got all the original reels and they rented out a movie theater. And every night they played a different Star Trek movie on the big screen. And I had never seen the motion picture on the big screen. So I went, and it was as long as I remembered it. Also, it was an original print that had degraded over time. So it was all slightly pink.
I was going to say, it was all pink. Yeah,
yes. Yeah. So that was interesting to see. Plus, it made sense with all the pastel uniforms. It was fine.
Yeah, it looked exactly right. Yeah.
That's right.
But a friend of mine who is a projectionist gave me about, I have about 8 feet of a reel of Star Trek II that broke when he was projecting it. And before they were going to try to send it back, and where they had rented it from said, no, just scrap that reel. It's useless now. And so I have 8 feet of essentially it's the part where Chekhov is saying, Oh, Captain, it was horrible. You know, talking about Khan putting the worms in their ears.
It so made I us have that. Do things.
Exactly. Say things. Oh, man.
Oh, that's good. Well, so this episode, what do you think, Aaron, of this episode overall?
It was not like I was looking forward to it. And within 5 minutes, I was just horrified that I had ever spent any time looking forward to seeing it.
It
made me think, like, how forbidding was this season of the show to new viewers, too, because I had seen these episodes before and I was like, oh God, I'm not caught up in what's happening here. I'm confused.
Yeah. And they tried to kind of do in the little previously on Enterprise and try and fill in the gaps, but it did not work.
No, it was just like, it was only previously on Enterprise to people who are already watching Enterprise.
Yes. This is to remind you of all the things you already know. New viewers, good luck.
And that's a little bit, I can see how that would kind of doom a series. Mm-hmm. Ratings wise, like that season could not have attracted new viewers.
No. And I was excited too, because it was a late season 3 episode. I thought, okay, well, this is, the conventional wisdom is Enterprise really started firing on all cylinders late season 3, season 4. Yep. And so I was like, great, this is going to be probably near the pinnacle of Enterprise. It is not.
Nope. Turns out it's the opposite.
That's right. This is not a good episode of Enterprise, sadly. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for watching this episode so we could have this great conversation about it.
Oh, my pleasure. Mostly my pleasure. I'm happy to have been on this. I'm not happy to have watched the episode.
That is a common sentiment among Random Trek guests.